All right, are we broadcasting?
We are broadcasting.
All right, fair enough.
See, Randy, I try to get rolling as best we can.
All right. Commissioner Kramer, are we ready to roll, my friend?
I'm ready when you are.
Commissioner Fetch, are we ready to go?
I am ready, sir.
All right, perfect. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. It's approximately a little bit after 3 o'clock today on December 10th today?
Yes, it is.
December 10th today. We're here to talk today about, I think this is our first work session actually, on case number PU12767, a request from Great River Energy for jurisdictional determination. Before I give any additional comments, I turn it over to Commissioner Kramer and Commissioner Fetch if they have any thoughts for the group before we start.
Just good afternoon. Look forward to the opportunity to hash it out.
All right, perfect. Yeah. Commissioner Fetch?
Good afternoon. Of course, this is the kind of case I really like to get my teeth into because this is purely a legal question. So I appreciate the opportunity to get into the case. Thank you.
Okay, very well. And we're joined by Alana Jeffcoat from Legal, Pat Fawn, and Jerry Lean from Staff. So maybe what I would, if it's okay with Commissioners Fetch and Kramer, I would just set the stage a little bit and then we'll open it up for discussion. But basically, we received a request from Great River Energy for jurisdictional termination. They've got a lot of information as to why they feel, quite honestly, that we don't have much jurisdiction in this. We have a memo dating back to 1993 where at that time, Alana's predecessor, Bill Benick, had some thoughts on the issue. And then, I guess later on, the argument or the discussion about whether Otter Tail and MDU have the right to interview and intervene in this proceeding. So I have my thoughts. Before that, I don't know who would be the first person to turn it over to.
Well, maybe if I could ask the question, but the retail wheeling memo that Bill wrote and the relevance to it, Alana, could you sort of tee it up with that, if that'd be fair.
The retail wheeling was the topic of the day, but there within that memo, there is a discussion about being a public utility for the purpose of providing electricity. So if it were a case, it'd be dicta. If the question was retail wheeling, it'd be dicta. But I think it's useful because Bill goes through, and the statutes haven't changed much except for adding the transmission provider thing, mm-hmm. and the service area agreement. The statute, the real part of the statute on PCN hasn't changed. So Bill does go through all of the statutes to answer the retail wheeling and also at the same time discusses this concept of public generally. And at the time, we had encountered the question with pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we have encountered the question with pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the one thing I thought a lot in that memo, I read it, he basically, his viewpoint, if he were sitting here today, would be that we would have no jurisdiction over Great River Energy in this case. I mean, I thought his memo was pretty clear is what he thought his thoughts were. The only thing I read in his memo was that he said a few customers, and that opened some doors maybe in this potential situation.
That's kind of what I thought. The I think you're correct. If there was one customer, a contracted customer, like there was in the Williston Basin Coke issues, the New Star issue, mm-hmm. I think it clearly fit within Bill's memo. The public generally is somewhere on the sliding scale. I mean, the public generally is obviously needs a PCNN,
right.
But the tenants of the industrial park, who may be unknown at the time, puts it somewhere in between. So I think that's one factual difference. And I didn't find it. I mean, I'm sure it's in here somewhere, but Bill was always very careful to say this is based on the facts that, you know, we're looking at today and other facts could change things. So the two things that I see that make it less clear, one is that, and the other one, it was brought up in the MDU filing, which I don't know that GRE has had an opportunity to respond to because it came a week after. And so we may be needing to allow them an opportunity to respond. What I read in the MDU filing was, well, maybe they're not under the electric statute, but they might be under the what we think of as the telephone gas statute and still need a that needs some work and some research. I haven't had time to do that, but that's the other point that needs some thinking through.
Remind me of the point of if Great River was to establish themselves as a retail rural electric cooperative. I mean, is there...
Well, there is nothing that the Public Service Commission can really do about that. And I wasn't even really talking about the whole cooperative aspect of this.
Right.
Because there's other things raised by Otter Tail about how they don't have, that there's cooperatives authority is defined. I don't know enough about it to know. It's not really our business to know. It's possible they don't have authority today. It's possible they might try to change their authority, and the state would be carved up with one more rural electric cooperative than we have today. I don't know, but we would be out of it.
Yeah.
It would not apply. I mean, it would be nothing that we would enforce or have to deal with.
Okay. Bonnie, do you have any teeing up thoughts, I guess? I guess the general, there's so many different viewpoints. I guess for me, where some of my questions are is that just issues aside, this is a request of jurisdictional determination. We have folks requesting to intervene, and this is not a rate case where you grant intervention. But, I mean,
not a proceeding at all.
Yeah, so that's where I'm what is their being Otter Tail and MDUs, what is their case here? They're trying to intervene on something that's not the procedures here. I understand it.
That's true. It's not what I would call a contested case under Chapter 2832, and I was going to double-check the actual language. But a contested case covers a lot of things. It's not just a complaint. It's when somebody's asking for something that you can grant or deny, okay? So if they were asking for some formal permission
on behalf of someone,
then you could have a contested case, which I think is what starts that formal procedure. On the other hand, we have the whole concept of open proceedings and open meetings. The two companies know what's going on and have their information in front of you, which I think they're entitled to do. And I was just telling Pat before we came in, we probably have to respond to the two petitions to intervene, perhaps with a dismissal or something that says it's...
Sure.
It's not appropriate, but you've been heard. I mean, you're not going to,
sure,
because they can't intervene, throw out what they've said. It's here and you're looking at it.
But if we go through and say, listen, we have no jurisdiction here whatsoever, end of story, then what is their recourse then? Where would they go? How would they set that?
They could go into civil court for like a mandamus. They could force us to do something more formal. They could try to stop the GRE by doing something more formal, and they could appeal. I'm not sure if it would constitute an appealable order, and that would, I guess, you would be writing back a letter, kind of, if you decided to answer the GRE question, because you don't have to do that either.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You can let that be. You would be writing back a letter. Is a letter an appealable order? Probably not.
You know, the practical point here, though, is what's at stake is a $1.3 billion investment that may not happen if we don't provide some certainty as to GRE's ability to provide a contract, with mm-hmm. with CHS.
That was my point about the process, is that the certainty wouldn't even be granted if we made a certain decision, whatever way it ends up.
That's true.
But there's some level there.
But there's something that the experts, have determined that there is a legal basis or no legal basis, whatever the case might be, and you can have a sense of confidence going forward that the people that know best, the people that have been granted the powers to know these things and to determine these things, have determined that they have no jurisdiction, and that is the administrative, deference that we get, or the deference that the courts have given to administrative agencies, that would back that up. So, but yes, you're right. There's always other recourse to the Supreme Court if you want to go that route. Yeah.
Pat, Jerry, did you have any thoughts you wanted to put out there?
I think Alana's kind of summed it up pretty well. from what I'm seeing of it, it does look like they're asking to serve the public generally in that industrial park. Anybody that comes in there, they're going to serve them. And there's the, as MDU points out in their brief, the area that there's their service area would be the industrial park. So that, I see that. The question is on...
So your big thing is the number of people being served. If it was going to be defined as one or two,
it's
then
not
that's a
how
much
many
difference.
People are there, is that they would serve everybody that comes into that area.
Yeah. And the unknown today, but they come, will serve. They come, yeah. will serve. That's the part that makes it a little...
So if he and MDU discusses that a little bit in their brief, and I was thinking that way before I read MDU's brief. So.
But if it was a single contractual relationship with Senex Harbor States and the only question on the table was CHS, then it might be then it would be more clear-cut, be more relevant to Bill's Wheeling, retail Wheeling memo.
And
Falkirk back in whatever year that was.
Right. Because that's the most analogous. Yeah,
that was very clean in my mind. It was one individual, very cut and dry.
And we have had the same, as you've said, with pipelines, natural gas. What if one contract leads to another? Because even in the fairly recent MDU Northern Border, whatever that was, not Northern Border, that the WBI or MDU gas to Falkirk. The next question was, but what if there's more capacity on the line and the Falkirk elevator decides they want gas instead of propane? And, you know, so, and it was one more, you know, have one more, you know, unilateral contract or bilateral contract would be my thought.
Question too.
Yeah.
But, you know, you
can only deal with what you know at the time. Yeah. Right.
Is this historically something that's come up that before an application would be made, if necessary, that a company would seek such a determination?
We've had determination. You know, we've been requested. We've had these requests before us. I don't know if anything quite like this. Can you think of when else have we had jurisdictional determination requests?
Well, we've had, I guess what I'm thinking of is we've had applications come in and then had jurisdictional determinations following an application. NuStar was one I can think of right off the bat.
Yeah, that puts you on pretty weak.
You know, and then we kind of internally hashed around, well, we think, you know, they should have filed the jurisdictional request before they filed the application, but maybe that's not the way to do it every time. Maybe it would be good if we had an application in this case so that we could hear all the interested parties.
This is what I'm trying to get at, is the process here. Because we're saying, okay, MDU and Otter Tail, you know, what standing is there for them to intervene? We don't have a case. You know, but is that true? Don't we have a case here? If, you know, if we're considering the question of jurisdiction, doesn't that constitute a case?
I think Alana's saying it.
Well, yes and no, and I don't know that it's going to matter one way or the other. As I said, you could allow them to intervene, and that's not going to be the answer one way or the other to this case. You're going to get the information. They'll still have to have standing to appeal or not. Yeah. So... It's interesting, but I don't know that it's going to answer the case. I do want to back up. We had one or two PC&N jurisdictional determinations, and really they were formal cases because the Coke Williston Basin one was in a complaint, and NuStar was in an application for a PC&N. But we've had a lot of them in citing, so we have sort of invented a process because people want a comfort level before they put down all this money and begin to build or whatever, of whether you're going to come after them or not. And that's exactly what's happening here. So we've had a lot of them in siting, and we even wrote a rule for this new lately for siting about what to submit if you want a jurisdictional determination because you have a size threshold or some definitional things.
Yes.
So we have invented a process. Now, We used it in a couple other areas. We used it in reclamation in South Hart. Well, the other
that's right
thing.
Yeah,
okay,
coal beneficiation.
We had a similar, you know, write a letter, Bill did an analysis, a legal analysis. He took it to admin, explained it to the commission. The commission
that's right
agreed with Bill. We sent a letter back. The next one comes in. Jim just sends a letter because it's exactly the same
right.
question.
Right.
And we were challenged, the beginning of the South Hart challenge, basically, that we should have had a more formal process. We should have had a notice, specifically a notice, an opportunity to be heard. And we said, well, why don't you file a complaint? And they did that. They lost that case, and that's the end of that case. But it raised the question of whether there should be a more formal process for such things.
We also had one. The other tough one we had was the Whiting oil or Enron that on what's a gathering line versus a transmission line for gas, and it came down to a 2-1 board on the what's processed gas uh-huh. and the lack of a cleared line. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those and there were no complaints or any interveners or complaints in that, so it was just us.
With company input.
With company input.
Right, which is kind of what you have here.
Yes, which is what we have. I think, you know, it's kind of what I was getting at the very first meeting when it came up. The question was, you know, determination to what's, to, you know, my view of it is that this is a request for a prudence determination. And while it is clear that Otter Tail, for example, would have an interest, it's really none of our business or their business. You know, I mean, to put it in extreme language, but the reality is we're going to consider all that because that's the value of being us and having all these smart people that help us, writing and complaining and pointing out and trying to intervene even if it's not appropriate or whatever the case may be. All the information still gets before us, and we mm-hmm. consider it all. Anyway.
Well, I mean, to follow on your thoughts, Kevin, is that, you know, I think it's, in my mind, that the Great River Energy, I wouldn't have even asked us. I would have just built it.
I know.
I mean, the fact that they asked the question right away put some doubt in my mind that they're, well, you know, because they don't normally come to us and ask for our jurisdiction on things. It's only when it gets close to that gray area that they come sure. to ask for some type of backdrop. And it's not just them. It's other companies.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And the only, I shouldn't say the only area, but for me, the largest gray area is just the number of, you know, go back to Bill's Bennett. You know, it appeared that selling power to a single industrial user or a small number of users that would not be electric public utility. It's that still, at what point do you flip the switch to being a public utility?
Yeah, is that 6 mm-hmm. or 8 or 10 or 12? Or, yeah.
And so that's going to be, I guess, kind of where I'm stuck at right now, that I think if it turns out, how do you deal with something you can't predict. Pat, you had a thought there.
It seems like in addition to that, we're not absolutely sure, I don't think, how Great River plans to do this. Like, do they plan to do it as a distribution, rural electric cooperative, or as a transmission, generation and transmission company? Or so, I mean, if Alana was writing a letter, a jurisdictional determination letter, she would say, well, if you do it this way, you know, mm-hmm. there's this, and if you do it this way, there's that, and mm-hmm. if you do it that way, there's this other thing. Until we know for sure how GRE is going to do it, we maybe can only, you know, set up the different alternatives.
So where do we go?
Well, I think you have to allow GRE some time to respond to MDU because it's a little bit, there's some new things in there.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one being, well, even if you're not under the electric statute, you might be under the other statute, which is, I think, news to everybody, but worthy of consideration. So I think we need to allow them some time to respond. And then I guess the commission in the meantime can be thinking, you know, the commission can say nothing, and it's a response of sorts.
It is.
Because I think if you have an obligation, you know, as a public official, if you thought they truly needed a PCNN, and now you know all this information, you have an obligation to, like, mention that some way or another. So sure. By saying nothing, you're saying something.
Right.
But I don't know that you absolutely have to say a formal letter or anything back. I mean, that's certainly an option.
How much difference does it make for, okay, this is a confined space we're talking about. We may not know the exact number of customers, but it's a confined space. Or a limited space.
Well,
defined space. Does that change your argument, Jerry, at all, which or Lana's too, where, you know, it's a defined area. There is going to be a limited number of customers, just practical.
I don't know if I even have an argument, but it seems to me if they want to serve the industrial park, and if they said that they're going to serve whoever moves into that industrial park, that they're holding themselves out. To
that. What if they're an equity partner in that industrial park?
I don't know at this point. So those are all questions on it. You know, this first came up, they called me and wanted to know what to do.
Why didn't you just deal with it, Jerry? It wouldn't be here.
and you know, I mean, it's a little bit more complicated of a question than I could just answer. And so I said, ask for a jurisdictional determination on it and see where it goes. So I don't really have a good answer. It seems to me it is a question of whether they need a PCNN. If they're not an electric public utility under 4903.1, then...
Which at this point they're not.
They don't need a PCNN to extend electric service that way. But the other argument, like Alana brings up, MDU brings up, is that... a public utility needs a PCNN to start providing service. And it seems like they would be that. Because of them wanting to serve everybody in that location. That would be their service area.
If they were all partners inside that service area, that'd be a much cleaner case to not have...
Yeah,
jurisdiction.
If this is a contractual arrangement with just the ethanol plant, then they're probably not holding themselves out to the public generally. So,
if they're serving themselves, which I think anybody's entitled to do that.
Yeah,
and
right.
There's a legal question on whether the... the distribution co-op or Ottertail can file a complaint that says they're violating or they're interfering with their system with this by extending service there under the TIA.
If they proceeded to
build
or whatever, got close to starting.
So,
quite honestly, for me, the Ottertail and MDU, I'm not really too much too worried about what they're saying right now. I'm more worried about what's going on, the facts of the Great River and what's going to happen in the park. So, I mean, do we go back and ask some of these questions? Like, explain to us how these are not generally available to the public and see what they come back with.
I think that would be helpful. I think in the meantime, they'll respond to the latest filing. And if you want to ask whether the legal basis for intervention or not, we can ask them to flesh that out a bit, too, because there wasn't much in there.
I agree with you, though. We're going to respond to them no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't like the option of just not doing anything, not responding, not doing anything, just make believe we didn't receive it and not going to consider it. That's a disservice because... again, if I were on the receiving end of that, I'd say, well, what are we to, what are we to assume from this or gather from this action? And we'll just go ahead and proceed to build, and then later on end up maybe that was not the right answer and get slapped in the face. I think then the commission could come under some real criticism for not doing something in the first place. So I don't like that answer of doing nothing.
I think agreement with that.
Yeah, I do think that maybe, ask the questions that are out there to ask. Jerry brought up, I think, what's one of MDU's main points, but, you know, what is serving the public generally? Is this, I think there's a number of questions that we might put to them to ask. And at the same time, they can respond to MDU's petition, whatever, brief, whatever. And whether you want to call it formally a petition for intervention or not, probably because there was no formal action noticed, the companies are just trying to get our attention and saying, consider what we have to say, please. And we'll put it in the form of a petition to intervene, because what else would you call it? Mm-hmm. Please listen to us,
Right.
That's right. What I said. They need some formal process for helping us.
So, I guess that would be, that's the way I'd be most comfortable going we need a lot more information from GRE about what this is all about.
Well, we should put together a letter, a staff letter.
Should we let the time run and get us an answer to the MDU and then see where to take it from
there? You don't need to do that.
Well, I think that they'll tell us what they're doing over there, probably.
I guess the question I'd like to ask them is, how are they not making themselves generally available to the public? What is their legal answer back to that?
Yeah, so I mean, we should at least hear it.
Because to me, that's the issue for me. The rest of this stuff is...
You know what's so fascinating to me about this, and I might have mentioned this to Alana in the very early stages, is if in fact bilateral contracts one-on-one with multiple customers is in fact, does not require PCNN, what would prevent, say, MDU from having one-on-one contracts with Walmart, for example, and having a separate entity that's, now granted they are a investor-owned utility, but what would prevent them from having going into the external parts and doing the same?
We kind of have that with Otter Tail in the last rate case. They defined a special rate for the large industrial group. So in the process of rate case, they get that. But your point is,
my point is territorial, though. Yeah.
If it's outside the city limits, they'd have to have the PCNN, and the co-op gets a chance to weigh in on on that case. Or if they don't ask for one, to complain that they didn't.
I was going to ask you this, Jerry. I read through some of the discussion there about both GRE and all these groups all being part of MISO and the transmission lines needed. Does that have any relevance to anything we're talking about here, how the transmission lines might be used to move the power around?
I can only see it under the PCNN statute, the 4903.1. As they're extending their plant and system, and then because they're cooperatives, it gets a little confusing because they don't serve any retail customers in the state, but they are a G&T cooperative, and so I think it's questionable on what applies to them under the...
As far as the rate structure, you mean?
Well, as far as whether they need a PCNN to build
back
the transmission
to that
line. And that would be under that new law there, that they'd be a transmission service provider. And then there's some language in there that talks about the rate has to go back to a public utility in order for them to need a PCNN.
The public utility customers are paying for it, and that's what triggers the PCNN. But just using the transmission lines doesn't imply that they do or don't need a PCNN here. I mean, that's the whole point of the open access transmission, that anybody can use it, including people that aren't regulated.
Well, and as a commission, we probably need to flush through our procedures on determining jurisdiction, because we're going to have one on determining whether we have any jurisdiction on making natural gas and their fertilizers coming our way here shortly, too.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sitting here thinking about that.
At least in that one, we do have a rule jurisdictional determinations, what to submit. And
for that one, we do.
For that one, for citing. So.
Okay, well, unless there's something else, we're probably at about impasse today.
Commissioner Kramer, did you have anything else for the good of the order?
I don't. I do not. I think it's okay. It's you're right on track. My sense of it, I mean, I'm probably not going to get to vote on this, but if there a vote even has to take place. The one thing I would say, though, is early on, I don't remember who it was that mentioned said this to me, but this particular situation proves it out more than anything, that pretty much everything that comes before us really is the beginning of a negotiation. Right? I mean, it really, regardless of what the process, regardless of the, you know, that's what it oftentimes ends up being.
Well, I thought that with the Falkirk one, that in that case, they met with the co-op and they worked something out and it kind of worked. In this case,
The difference may be that there is potential precedent here that's
absolutely
pretty big. So I don't know, but I guess my gut tells me. I get back to how do you solve the issue? What's the issue at hand? And I think the issue at hand is how do you pave the way for a $1.3 billion nitrogen plant at Spiritwood and. You know, we don't want to be the reason that it doesn't happen, right? So,
Commissioner Fetch?
Yeah, you know, okay. I agree with that, but I think it is going to really be some precedent, and so it bears some real consideration because, you know, we want to come up with the right answer.
Yep.
Well, let's do this then, if it works for everyone here. Why don't we put this down for the next meeting? And we'll schedule another work session on this first part of January. And then we'll have the commissioners will be on board. We'll have this as a meeting. Actually, one of them I know is listening to this for sure, maybe two. So we can – the companies give them some time frame. They can give something back within 30 days, and we can keep moving early January on this. Because what is the time frame that – I mean, do they request that the time frame that they're looking for on this? I don't recall other than as soon as possible. Does that sound reasonable for everyone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great next step. And I think you're right. In the meantime, they're preparing their response to MDU's points. And I hope there's a strong legal argument for Great River being able to do exactly what they're asking to do. That's what I hope. But we can't make up the law.
Well, I can tell you, if it was more defined who they were serving,
yeah.
I would have no problem voting. Yes, we have no jurisdiction on this.
We just want to do it right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. I mean, if they're okay, going once, going twice. Close the work session on case number PU 12767. Thank you.